Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. We've got a great show online for tonight.
Yes, we do. We are going to have Dr. David Lou Sanderson back to talk more about time slips, and some anomalous parallels. It's going to be a great show. It's going to be a special 90-minute show tonight. And so there will be plenty of time for your questions, for your call-in questions. If you'd like to call in, we'd love to hear from you. The numbers are on your screen. If you have a headset on your computer, you can use that click-to-talk button. Ask your questions either live as the call in or in the chat room.
Yeah, we want to welcome everybody because we've got a lot of folks in the chat room tonight.
Yes, we do.
Welcome, folks, and don't hesitate from asking questions. You know, last time Dr. Anderson was here, we had a lot of feedback, and so there'll be plenty of time. We've got a special 90-minute segment for you tonight.
Yes, indeed. So, being that we have a 90-minute segment, we're going to take about a 4 or 5 minute break about halfway through, just play some music and give everybody, even those in the chat room, a chance to do a pit stop and so forth. So we will do that. And without any further ado, we would like to welcome back physicist and now Paranexus consultant, Dr. David Lewis Anderson. Dr. Anderson, welcome back.
Hello, Doug. Hello, Grant. What a pleasure
to
be back here. And I love that new title, Paranexus Consultant. It's really great to be part of your team.
Oh, thank we love it,
much.
Too. Yeah. You know, you were on the show, what was it, in May, I think it was?
Sometime
in May. And it was a fascinating, fascinating show. And you made some interesting statements, I guess, that time travel exists and time travelers are among us and things like that. And we just, I think if I remember correctly, we just barely kind of got touched on some anomalous parallels. So tonight, let's start out with time slips and kind of talk about what those are, and then we'll just take the conversation from there. So can you explain what exactly is a time slip?
Well, a time slip can be taken in many forms, but essentially there's a common belief in our human minds due to our biological evolution, our cultural evolution, that time is linear. What we know clearly, whether we look at the ancient beliefs held sacred in religions like Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, or we look at what's coming out of the particle accelerators and super colliders today, is that in fact time is not linear. As a matter of fact, the common belief is that in many ways is that all time, past, present, and future, as we label it, exists here at once, at that same point in space and time. And there are many ways for time to be adjusted, some naturally occurring and multiple that can be achieved via the power of technology and some via the power of hidden within the human mind. We are, I'll emphasize for your listeners again, we're a group of scientists, computer mathematicians, physicists. We're not spiritual leaders or experts by any method, any measure, but we do recognize the fact that the power of the human mind to transcend time or to influence reality around it is quite significant. As a matter of fact, why there may not be a pure scientific basis for it, we do believe that imagination does create reality itself. And essentially, when we talk about time slips, any type of time slip is possible. Time slips that move an individual, a living organism, or information or matter forward in time.
Do we lose David?
Uh-oh. Looks like we lost him.
Let's take a look here. Are you there, David? Give it just a second. We'll get him back on. He told us that they had had some power grid issues, and he's just gone offline. And so he's coming back online now. So
hang in there, folks. Yeah. He'll be right back.
I'm going to try to get him right back on here now. And maybe he'll still be talking. That would be funny. Not even miss a lick.
Not even miss a beat, huh?
Yeah.
Hello. Hey. Well,
there you are.
So, yeah, that's not very nice to just drop us like that.
I think you got caught in a time loop, Doctor.
It was a time, so it was one of those naturally occurring.
Blame on the electric company.
Oh, there we go.
All right, so
anyway. Yeah, we were saying basically it is possible within the laws of our mathematics or physics or within the power of the human mind or within nature itself, naturally occurring or man-made, for time to be accelerated, to be slowed down, to be stopped, or to be reversed. And you can put that all underneath the umbrella of a time slip if you wish.
So I've read some different things on time slips. I know that Jenny Randall's from the UK has a book out. I read her book. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's a ufologist too, and she wrote a book on time slips and different things of that nature. And the way that she talked about it was, for example, quite a number of cases where somebody would, they'd be living in their little small town, and they would come home from work, and they would walk up to their house, and it had a white picket fence around it when it really never did have a white picket fence around it. You know, they scratched their head, walked in, came back out, and the picket fence was gone, or a building was there that wasn't there, or a tree was there that wasn't there. Is that the same kind of time slip that you're describing?
Yes, and so you're narrowing down a little more specifically, but yes, there's a lot of experience phenomenon. Sometimes associated, you have many people who have who awake, or they'll go through motions that they sense only to be 20 minutes, say, and they've actually been active or missing or for hours, mm-hmm. sometimes much longer. These types of phenomenon are not uncommon to report, and there's three primary areas where we see them. Not my area of expertise, but in ufology, associated with a lot of sightings of unidentified flying objects, of course, there are the reports of dramatic dilations or changes in time that weren't natural or along the same linear timeline. The other, of course, can be man-made, but we also do believe that time slips can be something that occurs naturally in nature. One of our core technologies at the Institute uses natural potential energy in curved space-time around the Earth, and we use technology to discharge that potential energy. We also believe, just like the phenomenon of lightning, not the same but similar for your listeners, is that it is possible, given the right occurrence in nature, that that potential energy can be discharged, and when it is, it can not only cause extreme accelerations of time, it can cause extreme regression or slowdown of time as well.
Well, let's just stop there for a second, and let's draw a parallel, or at least open a discussion and do a potential parallel. So let me just reiterate what you just said in terms of time can be slowed down or sped up. So what you're saying is that some people may experience the effect where, for them, time has slowed down. So they may be gone 20 minutes, but to everybody else, they're gone for several hours, correct?
That is correct.
And so, I mean, if you're into ufology at all, look at the obvious similarities there, the obvious relationship, hey, Grant, about missing time?
Yeah, of course. And sure, you know, and I think everybody is aware of the fact that technically when you get on an airplane, and I'm sure Dr. Anderson will verify this, that even though it may only be a billionth time frame, you're actually traveling in the future. And astronauts, because of their speed, are actually moving forward, although the time amount of time that they've moved ahead is very small.
That's absolutely correct, and in physics, essentially, that's a phenomenon that's been proved over and over again since the 1940s. Time essentially slows down for those people traveling at fast speed, say, orbiting the Earth in a plane or in a spaceship or on the space station, relative mm-hmm. to those left on Earth.
Which, so, of course, links with Einstein, who isn't it? Special theory relativity, Doctor?
That's exactly correct. Also, for those people who are ufologists, again, it's not our area of expertise, but we get asked the question a lot of time: who are these, aliens in these unidentified flying objects, that visit our Earth? And we don't speculate a lot, but there is one thing that we've observed. We've been involved with our technologies and time control, with those in India, in Japan, and several other locations. And one thing we've observed is that when you look at the popular reports of sightings of UFOs, and you look at how craft appear and disappear, are these time travelers from distant worlds, or are they time travelers from our distant future moving through time? And when you look at the observable effects in the reports from these UFO sightings, what you see are phenomenon, measurable phenomenon in terms of the audio spectrum and sound, visible light, the way the objects move, that if time warp field technologies or other time control technologies were in use, you would exactly see the phenomenon that were described in these reports going back for centuries. And that's interesting. Even though the physics now we know describes those observations very accurately as they would occur if that ship was traveling through time that was sighted, those reports actually go back hundreds of years, where people were making those observations now that are now seen to be totally consistent with our laws of math and physics. Interesting observation.
Yes.
I don't know what to conclude from it, but very interesting.
Well, if you look at it from a historical perspective too, Doctor, and I know we're kind of digressing a little bit here, but there's been reports, throughout history of people seeing UFOs. Alexander the Great makes a
yes.
reference to seeing one. We have Constantine, who claimed he saw shields in the sky. And the thing that I think is interesting about that, and this relates to what you just talked about, is maybe these are chrononauts, and what they're doing is they're going back into history. Maybe they're historians, and they're simply observing what happened, and then by observing, they seem to be influencing what happens.
Absolutely, and then that actually steers the conversation back. You said we were digressing, but it brings up an important point, Grant, that I'd like to mention, is that when we look at these time control technologies, they do hold the potential to change our lives and realities in ways very difficult to comprehend. That includes a potential impact of incredible good or unprecedented worldwide catastrophe. And when you talk about time slips, what we're seeing now is a dramatic increase in the reports of time slips and other observations of experts in certain fields who feel timelines are being re-engineered. And that's something that's very, very important, because when these time control technologies, regardless of their nature and who's using them, are applied, what happens is it doesn't just take an object in a controlled field and move it forward in time or backward in time. That very process of sending information or living organisms forward and backward in time actually changes the construct of reality, not just inside the field, outside the field, which means every time they're experimented with, there's the risk of a ripple effect that could affect human society as a whole or individual lives.
Would that also affect our memories?
Absolutely.
So we wouldn't even know it.
Well, interesting that you say that, Doug, because we do see 2% of the population, roughly, who seem to be gifted. They seem to be human temporal trip detectors. We have this device called a TTD that we use. But anyway, we call them human temporal tremor detectors. They either have the natural gift or they've trained their mind to be sensitive to changes in what would have been a natural timeline or a modification of a timeline. Unfortunately, I fall in that 98% where I need technology as a crutch. I guess I didn't spend enough time in meditation class, but
yeah, we failed at astral projection too, Doctor.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to think of how they might have influenced it. Simply, and you would hope to think that if any culture, any spacefaring culture, civilization, or even if it's us from the future, would be very, very cautious unless, you know, our theories about time and paradoxes are completely unfounded, for them to be coming back, because you'd think that they would be, with time travel would come incredible responsibility.
Incredible responsibility for incredible good or,
extreme
risk.
Disastrous, yeah.
And you asked the question about, and this borders on time slips a little bit for your audience, would we be aware of it? We have technology that can detect when time control technologies are applied. Okay, we can determine that. However, how do we know what changed? I'll give you an idea. When I say, I truly mean that when time control technologies are exercised, that it changes the construct of reality, that living conscious beings that existed might be phased out of existence, new conscious beings might be brought into existence. And we actually do this experiment. It's called Brothers and Sisters. And we used to do a lot of experiments with plant seedlings. And essentially what we do, we take, let's call it the grandfather, because people like the grandfather experiment. We take a plant seedling that's the grandfather, and then we grow generations of that plant seedling, and we move them to another part of the lab. We then take a group of seedlings from that family that share the same DNA. We put them inside the Time Warp Field Chamber, and we send them back in time. We trigger a mechanism that kills the grandfather, and then we bring those seedlings forward in time. An interesting thing happens. When they come forward in time, the seedlings inside the chamber carry the DNA they left with, but the seedlings that are outside the chamber, the DNA structure has changed. The descendants of the grandfather that were not inside that Time Warp Field Chamber going backwards in time and forward actually change, which means outside of the field, even though we're thinking we're controlling the impact of time control technologies, when they're exercised, the construct of reality in living organisms far outside of the experiment can be affected. And that's the danger. There's such a complex web of interdependencies when you try to predict what could happen. It's a little bit beyond the human potential today to do that. Yet we continue to play with the technologies thinking that they're safe.
Well, the thing that was so alarming that during your last visit with us, Doctor, was the fact that there's certain people out there, and, you know, call me cynical, but I don't think everybody is motivated for what's good for humanity as a whole. And I think what I found alarming was the fact that sending messages in the past to manipulate the course of history, and, you know, that to me is very frightening, in the sense that all it would take, you know, would be certain placed messages at a certain time, and you could change the whole course of history.
And the question is that, going back to your comment about time slips, is it already being done? And you're absolutely right, Grant. The range of technical possibilities are so enormous with this technology that the only limitations are the results of our imagination, which is insufficient. And, you know, we could say in the past that the human capacity for moral reasoning has kept pace with these developments in our human knowledge and our technological capacities. But with time control, the gap between this capacity for moral reasoning and technology has really reached a critical point. And the issue is, it's not a question of are these organizations experimenting with time control technology. They've been doing it since the 1960s, as early as the 1960s in the former Soviet Union. But the issue is, since the 1990s, the technological capacity and power of the technologies has grown, is growing exponentially. It's a very clear fact.
We have a caller on the line, Steve from the UK. Hey, Steve, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here. Hi.
Nice to have you. You have a question for Dr. Anderson?
Yes, it's about conservation of energy. Let's imagine you send something back in time. He knackers the current timeline and, you know, in effect starts a new one. Then, according to the new timeline, something has, you know, just more or less appeared out of nowhere, and yet the place it's disappeared from no longer exists and, in a sense, never exists. So doesn't that violate conservation of energy?
Actually, no, not technically. Stephen, thank you for the question so much. A lot of people, that would be a first reaction. By the way, that's a very good question. Essentially, it is true there's a law of conservation of energy, but you have to take a look at the concept of not of parallel universes, because actually we think from what we observe in the lab that the popular media concept of parallel universes is totally flawed. What we do see is multiple realities, and power does move through these different, call them hyperspaces, that are all part of not a parallel universe, but are all part of the same hyperspace, which makes up this one reality. And remember, as a human, our senses are limited by our biological evolution. They're limited by the function of the human brain, and we only perceive a small amount of what's out there. So the fact that we see, using our senses, which are in fact flawed, a difference in power levels doesn't necessarily mean that power still isn't there.
There.
Did I lose you?
No, you're there.
Oh, no, okay, good. I heard a silence. But also,
no, sorry, I was rapt listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. we're enraptured. Yeah.
But there's another phenomenon too, Steve. When you look at the source of power, in the 1990s, our first decade of using time warp field generators, we saw a violation of the conservation of energy. We would initiate a time warp field, and then once it stabilized, the field was generating more power than we were putting into it. It was totally impossible. It violated the conservation of energy. What we learned in the last 10 years, about in 2001 and 2002, we weren't violating the laws of the conservation of energy. What we had done was created a system that was harvesting the naturally occurring potential energy in curved space-time around the Earth. And I need to back up because I want to explain this to the listeners. When the Earth spins, it actually twists space-time around it like a spring. This is a fallout of Einstein's special and general theories of relativity. It was a theory up until the 1990s and the 1980s. We wrote some papers on it. And in about 2001, 2002, at the end of between those 2 years, we learned that what we had done was created a system that would discharge potential energy in that curved space-time. It's like a spring. If you were to take the Earth away, space-time would snap back. Now, granted, it's only a few arc seconds per year of curvature in that twisted space-time, but it's just like a spring in a clock. You wind it up, and that rotating Earth actually has a tremendous amount of potential energy that can be harvested out of curved space-time. That's where the energy is coming from in a time warp field generator.
So presumably, you know, by doing this, you're actually slowing the spin of the Earth, albeit microscopically.
Yeah, you know, it's absolutely a great question, because, you know, people do ask that. They ask the question, well, wait a minute, if you start harvesting potential energy from the Earth, what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. The Earth's rotation rate is going to change. The tilt of the Earth is going to start to wobble more. The tides will change. Weather patterns will change. But to give you an idea, if we were to, over a period of 1,000 years, were to slow the rotation of the Earth by 7/10,000 of a second per day, not every day, but 7/10,000 seconds of a day over 1,000 years, the amount of energy we could harvest would be 23,000 times that of the total power consumption of the United States. And the basic thought is, I don't agree with it, is that if we over 1,000 years, if we slow a day down by 7/10,000 of a second, will it throw the Earth into chaos and weather patterns and tidal patterns? The answer, a lot of people say no, but then again, do we really understand? It's something that we do try to understand more. But you're correct, Steve. I love your questions. If you were to harvest that energy on a larger scale, it does affect other phenomena on Earth.
Okay. Well, I have plenty of other questions, but I'll just pop off to let other people have a go. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Okay, Steve. Cheers. All the best.
Thanks.
Thanks for your call.
All right. Now, I have a follow-up question. You mentioned that there are not parallel universes, but there are multiple realities. Could you explain the difference?
Yeah, for your listeners, one of the most popular paradoxes, of course, is the grandfather paradox, is where I'll start. If I go back in time and kill my grandfather, then my father wasn't born and I wasn't born, so I never could have gone back in time. So now I am born, so I can go back in time and kill my grandfather. But if I do that, I'm not born, and you just spin around in the loop of what we call paradoxes. What we see in the laboratory is this concept in the movies, and I love it because I love science fiction. Science fiction is a beautiful tool to inspire future scientists. But in the case of observations in the lab, if an object or a person was to put inside a field and was moved backwards in time and killed their grandfather, they would not vaporize out of existence. They would still be there. Their grandfather would no longer. And from that point forward through time, in that position in time, then every other construct of reality would change, including if that person stayed in the field who killed their grandfather and came back. And so it is possible, what we see in the laboratory, that's what the brothers and sisters experiment shows. It shows that when you went back in time and these grandchildren of this original plant sharing that same DNA, when they went back in time and the grandfather of those seedlings was destroyed, they didn't vanish. As a matter of fact, they could be returned to the present time. But the destruction of that grandfather changed the living organism makeup of all the seedlings inside the lab that were not part of the experiment.
What a scary thought. What a scary thought if somebody's agenda was to do something along those lines. They could manipulate the genetics of a whole generation.
And Grant, what's even more amazing is you asked the question before, would we be aware of it? When those seedlings come back, you know what we expect in the lab? That they'll have the genetic makeup of the seedlings around the lab, not what was sent back. So we send it back with the DNA fingerprint of the plants. When they come back, we see the fingerprint that we put in there, but it doesn't match what the fingerprints were of the test seedlings that were not part of the experiment.
That's
absolutely
really incredible.
Amazing.
Especially when you think of things like, in the most extreme, you think of somebody like Hitler and his agenda to do eugenics. And if you could do eugenics the cheap and easy way through the manipulation of somebody through time, you could wipe out a whole ethnic group of people.
Yeah, the potential is so amazing. This is why the Anderson Institute and other scientists and different organizations who live in this research every day are stepping forward. There are tremendous good. There's so many opportunities for medical applications, for bringing future cures back from the future to solve, avoid disaster and eliminate suffering. So many good ways to help humankind.
Yeah,
but
especially
at the same
if you think, Doctor, in terms of like Huntington's chorea, where they could trace it genetically back to one person, 100 years ago, and for the good of science, or for the good, think if we could provide some sort of intervention, a positive intervention, to manipulate those genes so that thousands of people, 100 years, 200 years down the road, that whole genetic disorder would be completely gone, eliminated.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
And your point is well taken, is that the negative impacts are also there. Anything from timeline contamination. Remember, why we see the good, and a lot of people think, okay, it's okay to send information backwards in time and set up systems to receive that information, to send objects forward and backwards, to collect information, to record history. But when we do that, we actually run the risk of redefining individual lives and consciousness, of creating transcription errors with unsafe technologies, global catastrophe, even time wars, because a lot of people do look at technology like any technology. They look at weaponization and how can they use that as a strategic advantage, whether they're a private enterprise or government executive or a military strategist.
Are there a lot of your colleagues that are just as alarmed about the possibilities, Doctor? And are you guys, working shoulder to shoulder to try to, make sure that, folks are at least aware of it? Obviously, by coming on our radio show and talking about it, that helps a great deal. But I would imagine that you and your colleagues are probably doing the best you can.
Absolutely, and we actually have a four-step plan to deliver this, and you're absolutely right. The scientists we work with all around the world, not all around the world, but in several countries, for private enterprise and different government agencies, they see this new era in time control science much more deadly and risky than even nuclear research and development, because the gap between moral reasoning again, and our technological capacities has grown so wide. It's almost impossible now for ethical thinking to keep pace with the changes that these types of technologies are going to happen. Now, I will tell you that the scientists I work with do feel that a big part of the solution is to put more onus on the scientific community. There's a lot of questions. With the ability to look into the future or to send information to the past, what do we do with this knowledge? How do we handle it? Who should have access to the knowledge? Given that it's not just social implications, but it's personal implications in relation to anything, anyone, anywhere. And we do feel the onus needs to be on the scientific community. I'm not the only one. There are many peers, especially in India and Japan, that they feel the onus must be on the scientific community to both demonstrate that there are no negative long-term consequences as we use the technology, that we have to adopt complete transparency and disclosure, that we have to drive global education initiatives, we have to establish, I don't want to say a world time council, but we need a moral compass guided by the global society that determines not just how we use the technology, but how we further development, because the development also creates a risk. And then, of course, we have to monitor it. Those are the four steps. And yes, I'd say the scientific community is, I'd say, equally split right down the middle.
The thing that's so scary about it is the fact that it could be going on right now.
Hello, everybody. I really apologize for the dropout there. I have no idea what happened. My internet connection dropped out completely, and I'm trying to get everybody back online. I appreciate your forbearance. Give me just 1 minute to get everybody back on, and we will continue our program from there.
Hello.
David Anderson, Doctor of. Come back.
Hey, I'm here.
Great, Grant. Just telling everybody, I have no idea what happened. I don't know if.
Are we back on the air now?
Yes, we are back on the air. My internet connection just dropped out, and I couldn't get it back. So
it's
because
the people who are manipulating the timeline are onto us.
I was going to say, Doug and Grant, you're probably trying to share some information that people are trying to re-engineer out of the historical timeline. So.
Yeah, well, you know, as strange, at the risk of sounding paranoid, you know, we've had technical difficulties from time to time when we've had guests on. I mean, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. All right, so I have no idea where we were at, but I apologize, folks. Have no.
Yeah, sorry about that, everybody.
That's been the worst snafu we've ever had in what?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny, my internet now, my computer just. I keep it pretty clean. So anyway, all right. Where were we? Do anybody remember? I've had too many things going on in the last.
Yeah, no, I know. I was talking, but I can't remember what I was talking about. But you know, one of the things I've wondered about, Doctor, is you know when you're talking about getting back to time slips, one of the things I remember a friend told me one time that when people see like the Loch Ness Monster or maybe Bigfoot or Sasquatch, what they're seeing is not really a living creature, or they may be seeing a living creature, but what they're seeing is something that's either forward in time or back in time. Now, you know, maybe the time slip has something to do with, you know, we stumble across one of those oxbows and it opens a little window into either what happened in the past, like with Loch Ness Monster. Maybe you are seeing a plesiosaur when the conditions were a lot more favorable for it to live in Loch Ness. But nonetheless, it certainly makes one wonder.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And it really goes back to how we sense things, and not just time slips in time, but slips in space and in time and in other dimensions of this reality. And, you know, we were talking, I want to make sure we don't go too far off topic, but it is important for anybody, and it's something we work very aggressively with young college students. We have to understand, as human beings, we do not see our universe as it is. We see our universe the way we are. We view our universe through our senses, which are limited. The senses are processed by the human mind, which further limits it. Our human mind function is to rationalize what the senses see with its own belief system. So we're only a human being sensing a very microscopic part of a much larger macroscopic universe, and not just a universe, a reality. We see so many, just a limited number of dimensions of this beautiful reality we live in. Of course, we talk to those other people. All of us walking, you know, seem to have the ability to see, to hear, to touch, to smell, and to taste. But there are those individuals. There are other senses that are recognized in science through technology means that human beings have the capability to use as well, to sense and perceive images moving through time or images moving through alternate realities. The ability to control and circulate consciousness and frequency, the ability to read energy signatures, molecular transmutation, some people call it shape shifting, is something we talk about. Projection of consciousness. People used to say that was ridiculous, but now we know that we, through phenomenon like quantum entanglement, that it is possible to project information even across great distance that require faster than light travel, yet it can be done. We even just published a story about a group in China that set a world record for quantum entanglement. The ability to create multiple holographic manifestations, and even some people who claim at high levels to be able to use their consciousness to enter other dimensions within this reality as well as to exit them.
That's interesting. Everybody still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, good. Don't do that to me. Okay.
So, well, I can have some fun with this now. Okay, I'll just
keep
silent.
You guys can really freak me out. All right, so there's a number of things. You know, one of the things, I don't even know how relevant this is to time, so I'm going to pass on it. But so part of the program tonight, though, is to discover or at least discuss whether some of these so-called anomalous things that are happening could be due to natural phenomena such as time. We've already talked about UFOs and maybe some of these missing time experiences, which are not so much missing time as they are a differential in the flow of time between the experiencer and the rest of the world. One of the things I've got to tell you, Dr. Anderson, is that I really appreciate your open mind, your open-mindedness toward things, you know, such as consciousness and imagination. You know, when you mentioned earlier that you know, we basically create our reality. Isn't that pretty much what you said?
Absolutely, and we see those ties, and it's not just some people. We say that they think we're really. If you study, I was lucky when I did my. I decided to get a degree in philosophy, and when I did my thesis, I did a study on the parallels between the written history of science, philosophy, art, and religion through all recorded history. And what's interesting, for those people who live strictly within the walls of analytical science, the point Doug is making is very profound. What is coming out of the new physics, quantum entanglement, what's coming out of the particle accelerators and super colliders, basically is saying that the world is a dynamic web of energy. Everything is interconnected without exception. And these are things that were held sacred in the ancient religions, but now for the first time, science is proving that. And what's interesting for those people who live within the walls of analytical science, what science is now showing today, that when they stand up on a chair and they peek over that wall that seems to have been built up creating religion, spirituality, and science, what they're going to see is that they're really looking at the same thing. They're inseparable. The scientific definitions of the nature of time and the spiritual, religious, and consciousness studies, as they refer to time, are really one and part of the same.
And that's what's so fascinating about quantum physics, is, you know, the whole entangled thing is that it's really, I would say, one of the brightest lights for explaining some of this anomalous phenomena that's going on, especially with regard to hauntings and even other things, psychic abilities. And it's fascinating because what you're saying is absolutely true. And it's kind of funny to me that, you know, the spirituality aspect of it preceded the scientific aspect of it, which, I don't know, I guess it just came from a people's experience.
Well, there certainly is a spiritual dimension to humans, something that goes well beyond time and space, and humans do have the ability to sense other dimensions. When you really look at it, generally scientists would say today that the universe, our universe, is constructive of roughly about 11 dimensions. We really only perceive three of those. A lot of these abilities to perceive time slips, to create different types of manifestations in timelines, or to see other phenomenon, whether they be spiritually driven or other, really are just perhaps our minds overcoming our their own limitations and be able to look into some of these other dimensions. And again, it's you know, when we look at the popular definition of reality, really what it is, it's a collective hunch, and we're using these senses. And for your readers or your listeners who don't get that, I always like to make the analogy of the television set, the old television set, sitting on front of your table in front of you right now. And the way TV used to work before cable and the internet was, of course, there were electromagnetic waves filled with information and energy flying through the sky. And you would lean forward in your chair and you'd turn the tuner. And you'd be able to tune into one aspect of that web of information and energy, that one channel, and display it. And that's exactly what the human mind does. The human mind has a very limited number of senses, our human mind is like a television tuner. But the problem is, our tuner is extremely weak. We know scientifically that there are a much higher order of dimensions in this reality that we can't perceive, yet we know they're there. And one of the first steps in learning to understand that and to become a better part of that wider reality or universe is really first to understand what are the limitations of your own human senses and mind. And that's what many people spend a lifetime training to do.
So basically, we're shackled by our physical limitations and our inability while we're in this physical form to receive those higher frequencies.
Absolutely. And a 15-second blip for those scientists out there, we do this exercise with college students, and we tell them, take your time on your wristwatch, use the speed of light as a conversion factor and convert it to meters, and then look at the laws of space-time physics as they're taught in college or in higher-level programs. What you see happen, if you can overcome your mind's blockade to saying that's ridiculous, you can't convert my wristwatch to meters, if you hypothetically do it, what you find out is that the complex world of space-time physics boils down to basic algebra. Beautiful book out there, Space-Time Physics by John Archibald Wheeler and Edwin Taylor, that is dedicated to the entire subject. It talks about how space-time physics is algebra, but you have to overcome your mind's and body's limitations. And that's true of so much in this world.
And there was also a remark in the chat room about what I'm about to say about entanglement. Could be some of this haunting phenomena could be part of that. I mean, people could be creating that part of their reality in some cases.
Absolutely. When you know, when we look at the, you know, we talk so much about you know, what happens at the end of life, you know, is consciousness. We do believe the world is a dynamic web of information and energy. At its fundamental core, the universe and everything in it begins with waves of information and energy that make up consciousness. And that consciousness fabricates what we sense as physical reality. And it is possible that when people leave one area or one set of dimension in this universe, that they moved simply to another, and that consciousness continues or it transforms. And perhaps these sightings of ghosts, of other phenomenon, simply are glimpses into other dimensions that make up our reality right here today.
Would that be part of the multiple realities that you referred to earlier?
Absolutely, alternate reality. And it doesn't mean that there's more than one reality. What it means is we're living in three dimensions of reality with the in very crippled looking at this fourth dimension of time. Let's say hypothetically there are seven other dimensions. There's a lot more going on in our reality, much significantly larger than what we're able to perceive, and much, much more than we're able to understand. So these sightings could be just brief glimpses into other dimensions and other components of this reality.
I guess a good example would be a fish in water. He has no conception of the world that exists outside. His world is totally, immersed, but he's totally ignorant of what goes on in the world in a dimension of air.
Exactly. It's very, very foreign. The only difference is that it's much easier for that fish to jump out of the water and try to understand it than it is for us to overcome thousands of years of biological and cultural evolution.
Yeah, there you go, Doctor. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good point.
I was going to say, you have to blame our education system, because when you take a look at our education system, it's little more than an expensive isolation from reality. I mean, really, many times all we really have to do is open our eyes and listen and really try to understand. Anyway, I'm sorry, I cut you off, Grant.
Oh, no, that's okay. I lost my train of thought. But, it's just one of those things where, as far as our educational system, it's not designed to create independent thinking. It's quite the opposite in many cases, at least the lower echelons. It's designed to create widgets and people that think similarly. And so I know what I was going to say, too. If anybody's been watching, and I'm sure you have, Doctor, and many of us here at Paranexus have, the latest events at the Large Hadron Collider. They're talking about, now I saw an article today where they're saying that the proton is much smaller than they ever thought it was. And, there's all these new things that are coming out, and I think we're going to be totally amazed with what physics is going to come up with in the next decade. We're going to be astounded.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think, though, it has to be balanced with non-scientific approaches as well. I think we're looking at a revolution in the scientific method. When you take a look at what's coming out of these experiments and the final conclusions, things like quantum entanglement in the previous decade and what's going to be coming out, what we're going to see, and we have a little bit of an advanced track in some of this, what you're going to see are things that are very much aligned with spiritual beliefs that have been held again sacred for thousands of years.
Yep.
So are we just simply rediscovering ancient wisdom? And, it's one of the flaws of the scientific method. Remember we talked about our senses being limited, that crippled television tuner that can only see a little bit of information and energy? So the only thing we accept as fact is that which can be put in terms that our crippled senses that we know can't perceive most of the universe around us can perceive and can be measured. And it's absolutely ridiculous. What we're really doing is restricting. The scientific method in many ways needs to be balanced more.
Yes.
I don't understand why science has always been afraid of the spiritual. It's almost like if science – and I understand why. But I also think that there's got to be that combination, that blending, because then, as you talk about, Doctor, then that might be the yin and the yang of it all.
That's very well said. A lot of colleagues at the end of the day, after all the long dialogues, when we as physicists go to the bar and have a drink wherever it is, we talk about that, and we talk about for young students and the yin and the yang, as you say. If you try to use your mind and what you've learned to study reality, what you'll get is that you won't understand either your mind or reality. But if you try to study reality without using your mind, you'll learn to understand both of them. Huh. And, we have so many preconceived notions, and we have so many limitations due to our biological and cultural evolution. These are blocking our ability to grow and learn. And we're actually not plugging the video here, but we're doing a new documentary, and we're going to talk in detail about a detailed comparison about the scientific method of investigation and advancement as compared to the Buddhist method of investigation. Believe it or not, they're very, very close, with the one exception of the point that you touched on yin and yang and how they determine observations.
Mm-hmm. Let's ask some questions from the chat room. Going back a little bit to our earlier conversation, when you did the experiment with the seeds in the lab, have you sent anything else forward or backward is one question.
The answer is yes, absolutely. We originally used seedlings in the 1990s in our first two generations because of, we had some what were called boundary layer problems, and unfortunately we sacrificed a lot of seedlings in the names of scientific research. Once we solved those problems, right around in 2002, we began experimenting more with living organisms, more aggressively moving them, exposing them to accelerated time rates forward in time as well as backwards in time. That's been done in the United States. It's been done in India. It has not been done in Japan yet. Japan actually focuses on sending information backwards in time using quantum tunneling phenomenon. That's their area of expertise. We don't know if it's being done in Russia, but it's being done all around the world, not just at the Anderson Institute.
And then another question, I think, similar to that. What was the test that you were talking about, the 2% is the question.
Well, the 2% is, we believe that 2% of the population, and that's what we seem to observe and many of our peers seem to support, 2% of the population of this planet, of human society, have the natural ability to be able to sense time and anomalies in time or to influence time in ways that are very different than most other people. And like I said, for me, technology is a crutch. I hope someday to become more of a spiritual person, develop those higher senses. But we do see the ability for some people, we talked about, we have a device. It's called a temporal tremor detector. It's like a seismic detector used to detect earthquakes. We use it to detect when does somebody activate a time control technology. We have people who, with 99.8% accuracy, can sense the same events without using any technology. And we do see that. And why we don't understand it, one thing we do understand is that mankind, for your listeners, for millennia, man has been on a quest to understand the true nature of time. Mankind for millennia has never really been able to explain the nature of time. You know, even some of the earliest writings, I think, went back far back in history, but philosophers, like Plato, first talk about time as the moving image of eternity. Aristotle in the 4th century B.C. called time as a physical definition of the number or measure of motion. Plotinus in the 3rd century talked about it as a productive life of the soul, and then St. Augustine talked about it in a very new way, which holds today, by the way, which is an illusionary product of our mind. But the point being is that for millennia, some of the best minds in human society on this planet have not been able to understand the nature of time. And the answer is, and I would encourage your listeners, there's not one way to view this. If you really want to learn to understand time, you have to look at it from every perspective. You need to, I would encourage you, I should say it that way, to study how time is defined physically in our definitions and standards, to look at the definition of time and its essence in religion and philosophy, the different types of time control technology out there, how people perceive it, how it varies within culture, how it's expressed within our arts, because there's no one right answer. We've been searching for millennia and struggling to identify what time is, and if you try to define it one way, that's one of the greatest weaknesses. You'll never find the answer. The truth is, as we get closer and closer to the true understanding of the nature of time, every perspective may in fact be true.
Okay, and related to that, there's another question. You had mentioned being able to time travel just using the mind. They want to know, how is that learned?
Well, actually, there are... let's talk about that. There are people who dedicate their lives to developing the power of the human mind. This is something that a Buddhist monk would do. A Buddhist monk would spend their entire life dedicated to doing nothing but training and develop their mind to be sensitive to the universe around them, both the universe that they can sense and see with their physical senses, but also that which they can only sense through the capacities of the human mind. When you look at it too, our brains do calculations all the time that don't require conscious effort. Only our attention to an openness to any idea let the information through into our consciousness. And although the brain absorbs and senses all this information in the universe around us, most of it is not admitted into what we call our normal consciousness. And people train their minds to do that. And there's a lot of ways to do that. I'm not saying that everybody needs to run off and become a Buddhist monk. I'm trying to think, there actually are some even programs. People have dedicated their careers to offering training and learning, helping people develop their minds to better understand and transcend time. And we do have some links to that on our website as well.
And then there's one other question. How has your work been received by the scientific community, your theories?
Oh, it's an interesting question. I got to tell you, in the 1980s, when the first insight came into what we label time warp field theory, I presented it to Air Force Systems Command when I was a scientist working for themselves and for DARPA. And at the time, they didn't understand it, mainly because they were focused on another mission. And I think in the 1990s, people chuckled. That was until our first time warp field generator came online. How are we received now? To give you an idea how we're received, our team, myself specifically, I've met with senior executives for the National People's Congress for Education, Science, and Culture, as well as Public Health and Ministry of Science and Technology in China, in Beijing, in Japan. We work very closely with the Japanese government and their facilities near Kyoto City. In the United States, and we're very active with several partners, both private and government agencies. In India, we work as a partner in time control research with their Ministry of Science and Technology and their Defense Research and Development Organization. I'm dropping some of these names for your listeners because it's not an issue of how we're accepted. It really is the fact that it is accepted, and that these organizations, both government agencies and private enterprise, are exercising technologies today. And we work in partnership with some. We're negotiating with others. But it's something that's underway, and unfortunately, there's the desire to keep it non-transparent. They want to keep it out of the public eye. And that's something, again, because the technology has reached such an incredible potential that most scientists feel that shouldn't be done anymore. But within those circles, scientists perceive us very, very well.
Okay, good. Well, that's actually good to hear, because we were thinking they wanted to take you out in the public square and flog you or something. All right, so here's another question that actually came a while ago before our interruption. And basically the question is, when a person has a dream of some event, and then some time down the road, perhaps even years later, it comes true, is there a possibility that that's some form of time travel?
I think absolutely yes. One thing we believe, and why we sense time to be linear how do I answer this question? I want to go in so many different directions on it. Doug, let's see if I can reel it in.
I know.
Oh, boy.
Well, obviously it touches on what we've already talked about, consciousness, other dimensions, other realities, or other frequencies of our reality, if you will, channels of our reality.
Yeah, I think the issue of sensing something in the future is a flawed statement. It represents, and when I say flawed, I mean if I look at the experimental evidence of the work being done by the DRDO in India and ourselves and partners here in the United States, our work tends to be quite similar, so I reference those two specifically. What we see is why our culture disagrees is that all time exists at once at the same place. And a lot of people would be laughing at this. But so people ask the question, well, what, you know, if I do sense, I do perceive something or sense something that comes true later, that term later, I think in many ways is flawed. What it means is that person is very, very much in tune, perhaps, with the nature of time, and they'd be able to move through time or transcend it, at least in thought or in perceptions, just like they move through the three dimensions of space. But I have to emphasize, a lot of people would say, that's crazy. How can you say that? How can you say it, David? You know, you must be sitting on the other end of the phone here smoking your shoelaces. You know, you got to be, Dave. That's
I've never tried that.
You too, doctor?
Grant breaks from the loop sometimes.
What's wrong with Grant.
But
don't tell anybody, doctor.
But I want to, in a very friendly way, challenge the question, the fundamental nature of the question, because it represents where we run into the limitations of our rational minds. We believe time is linear in our culture. But let's take a look for a moment. There are some cultures on Earth, for example, in the Buddhist culture, a Buddhist monk would laugh at you if you said time was linear. He would say time is a circle, and it's continually looping back on itself all the time, is that there is no past, present, and future in that sense. And you might still laugh, but then we take a look at some cultures. Let's go to South America and look at the Piraha tribe of Brazil. They have no concept of time in their lifestyle. And let's move a further north within North America, and we move into the Navajo and Hopi and Indian tribes of North America. I don't know if many people know, in the ancient language of the Navajo, there were no verb tenses for the past or the future. In their language, they never talked about, they only talked about the quality of an event happening, never its temporal quality. Their culture believed that all time exists and all their ancestors exist and all their future existed at the same time. Just as hard as you and I will agree, time is linear and moving, just like this 90-minute show. But as much as we believe time is linear, other cultures, even within our human society today, think that is absolutely ridiculous, and they're chuckling at us right now if they're listening to us and having somebody translate the show, because they can't believe, why does somebody think time is linear? But the point is, time does vary by culture. This idea that somebody perceives something that happens in the future or presenses something and it comes true might be one of two things. They might be viewing something through time. They might be sensing something through an alternate reality or other type of time loop.
Well, you know, I think it's absolutely essential for some people to see time as linear, because that gives them some anchor. It gives them some way to feel that they have some control over the universe. And I think that if most people, if your man on the street is challenged about that, they're going to completely dismiss it. But I think it's really interesting, though, Doctor, when you talk about the other cultures, how they're in the here and now, which is essentially what Buddhism talks about, being constantly in the here and now, as opposed to dwelling in the past or worrying about the future. Be here, be now, be aware of what's going on as we sit here. So that's really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's a great, you know, there are, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but, you know, it's a very deep insight, and I'd encourage your listeners to explore, why don't we understand time? Why has mankind been struggling for millennia, some of the greatest minds at different points or positions in history, and not able to understand it? And you hit some of them. Materialism, we shrink the magic in our world and universe to the size of our daily routine and material possessions. Human psychology, one of my favorite quotes is, time is a fire in which we burn, or it's one of the greatest greatest teachers, but unfortunately kills all its pupils. In some ways, our human psychology, time is linked to our mortality. Our biological and cultural evolution has crippled our senses to really perceive what the real universe is. And sometimes our religious and spiritual beliefs blind us and make us look at things in very narrow ways, and sometimes in very wide ways. But there are so many reasons why we don't, and we can learn a lot individually as we each look at that and study that on our own.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, would be rather, you know, maybe we're the only creature that's really aware of our own mortality. And the sad thing is, would be to, you know, to dwell on the fact that our time is so limited, rather than looking at it as the journey and what you can learn on the journey.
Yes, I understand. I'm trying to learn that lesson, too.
Yeah, me too.
I've got a lot to learn.
Yep.
Wow. So some interesting stuff. So we've talked about time slips. For those of you who have joined us late, we talked about time slips and how time can run differently for different people. Some people can experience being gone, say, a few minutes, while the rest of the world experiences a few hours. There have been a lot of stories like that that have been related. I've read a number of them in books about children are missing what they think is just a few minutes, and it's been several hours for the parents, things of that nature. We've talked about how sometimes that can be perceived as anomalous phenomena. We've talked about consciousness, a little bit about how perhaps we or people at times can create that haunting type phenomenon. Of course, that's in line with parapsychology too, which explores the human psyche and the human's mind, you know, the mind's ability to have psychic abilities and so forth. So, Dr. Anderson, where does your work take you from here? What are your future objectives?
Well, future objectives, one of the greatest is, and then I'll go back to the technology itself, is the challenge that society will now face with this new type of technology. The impact on society is going to be so profound. And you notice, your listeners might have noticed, I use the word time control and time travel not interchangeably. Some of the first applications of time control technology or time travel technology will be for products used in everyday life. One example would be, for example, like a stasis chamber in medical fields where people can be put in and time rates can be slowed to prevent damage while treatment can be prepared or executed. That's something India does very well. India has actually already created a complete mini catalog of products, some of the first commercially available products that will be put on the market that employ different types of time control technologies. But where do we go from here? First, we do see the risk to society. There's a tremendous risk in using the technology without understanding the consequences. So first, before we talk about the technology, we want to see transparency and disclosure by every agency around the world active. We want to launch a global education initiative, which is a very big part of what we're doing today, and we hope to have that up and online this year. We are struggling to do something, and that's to devise a solution for a moral compass guided by human society on a global basis that will determine how the technology is applied, and then we need to monitor to make sure the technology is used responsibly. The third one is the challenge, and we'd welcome any advice from your listeners. What we need to do is essentially build and deploy a moral compass that decides how this technology is used and developed, that is guided by the global consciousness of all human society that spans all geographic, national, political, and religious boundaries, and looks at one goal, and that's using the technology safely for the benefit of the human race. This is a difficult thing to do, but also because of the consequences, if not done, we feel there's an opportunity for that. With regards to the technology, we continue to promote this educational initiative, but we're on our third generation Time Warp Field Generator. We are spending a lot of time trying to now model and better understand scenarios where the technology can be used more safely, not just for test subjects, but for the environment around where the tests are performed. That's a very complicated area. The technologies are actually pretty sound now, whether it's transmission of information backwards in time, whether it's speeding up or slowing down time for different applications or operational test procedures, these are pretty safe. But there still are, I should say, some safety concerns, especially when time is reversed and accelerated at greater levels. We're spending a lot of our time and attention right now on keeping the field stable. What we notice now is we've come pretty far since the 1980s, In the 1990s, we could control time rates inside a spherical field, but we had a lot of dangerous radiation effects within that. In the next decade, we were able to eliminate those, but we couldn't successfully reverse time in a stable manner. Now we can do that, but we have a lot of instability issues that we're trying to work on, and that we're specifically working with an agency in Japan. But this is the three areas where we're focusing the most right now.
Well, here's a couple of other comments from the chat room before we run out of time. In your opinion, did time have a beginning? Is there a source to time?
Well, I disagree with the, and this is based upon experimental observation. A lot of people suggest that time began with the Big Bang, and the Big Bang driving the expansion of the universe is what created time. That in fact, when if the universe were to begin to contract, that time would reverse itself. In the end, and this is personally my opinion, I'm not an expert in that area, I look at the Big Bang simply as a thermal instability, one of many that has occurred and will continue to occur in the dimensions of the universe that we perceive. And a lot of people then will, you know, boil down to, you know, what is the source of time? Is there a God? There's, of course, a lot of speculation in this area as well. But when we really open our eyes and we, you know, fasten our gaze on the face of the universe, what we really see is a very universal and perfect order. We see that there seems to be a very delicate balance in equilibrium. There's a precise order and measure. And if we go further down into that, it continues to be an order and balancing that really catches our attention. And it seems like somebody is constantly, or something is changing that order and always renewing the balance in our universe. And as we continue to do that, there seems to be a wisdom and a justice behind that. And a lot of people would say, you know, that perhaps, you know, as we look at that order, as we look at that wisdom, that perhaps that is the basis of a unity in everything. And
well, you know, that's really interesting that you mention that, Doctor, because as a physicist, I'm sure you're well aware of, our physical bodies are always trying to stay in a state of homeostasis. And so it's just like we're a little microcosm of the universe in the sense that we're trying to maintain this balance all the time. And the universe always maintains the balance. So that's absolutely fascinating.
Well, if you think about it, and I'm just spinning that one step forward, Grant.
Did I lose everybody?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I guess we lost Dr. Anderson.
Let me.
Yeah, if you folks can hear us, let us know in the chat room.
I will. Let me see. We have dropped him. Well, we didn't intentionally drop him. Let me see if I can get him back. Hopefully he doesn't go offline here. We're trying. We're running out of time a little bit, and I've got a couple of questions we need to ask.
Yeah, so hang in there with us, folks. Yeah. We appreciate your patience tonight.
They've had some electrical issues in New Mexico where he's at.
Thank you, Otherworld Radio, for letting us know that we can hear you.
Yeah, Vinny, there
you are. You're back, Doctor. Thank you, all the folks out there that let us know that you can still... We're still in touch.
Great. We're getting a little bit short on time, and I'd like to, if you want to finish up what you were saying, Dr. Anderson, then I can ask you a few other quick questions.
I think I closed it out.
Okay, great.
I can't remember, so I'll let you lead.
Okay. The question, I've got to scroll up here a little bit. On remote viewing, just a real quick question on that and a quick answer. Is remote viewing ever involved time traveling? I know that I've heard that some remote viewers can, you know, move ahead through time and so forth. Do you have any knowledge of that or any comments on that?
No in-hand knowledge other than two quick points. Number one, the Moscow Aviation Institute, which was one of the leaders in quantum tunneling, sending information backwards in time in the 1960s, was very active in very serious remote viewing experiments. They kind of lost traction in the 1980s and picking up again. And of course, the the Montauk experiment, which was the one of the great legends of the great experiments in time that was to follow the Philadelphia experiment, integrated human consciousness with the technology to try to gain better stability, as the story goes.
And then I know that you had mentioned this, but let's reiterate it. The question is the creation of a world time council underway to be a moral compass to watch over this kind of technology? And if so, is a charter being written between nations?
This is something we discuss mostly behind closed doors with the ministries of science and technologies in the different governments and in other departments, if you will. The greatest challenge in doing this is getting a unilateral agreement for everybody to step forward and provide transparency, at least to a high-level overview of their activities. We don't have that yet. We do have consensus among many leading scientists, some of them with the support of their governments or organizations, and some without the support of their governments or organizations, that this needs to be done. We're working with a partner in Korea, in Japan, and several in India that are drafting a charter for a World Time Council as a starting point. This is where we really need help of a lot of the listeners out there. And a big part of this is driving education and awareness. And that's our focus now. But the short answer is no, we don't have a clear solution. And we don't believe it'll come unless we get full transparency and disclosure, which we're committed to doing.
And would you please state your website and also the videos that people can get or when they will be available? And one of the questions on the video is, when will a video of the time warp generator be released?
Okay. We have the website is andersoninstitute.com. It's free, easy to navigate, and a lot of free educational material, which is going to explode in volume between now and the end of the year. I'd encourage your listeners to join there. Also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We provide a lot of daily bulletins about what's going on around the world in different time control research. We do have a video available on Amazon.com today. It's called Time Travel Journeys into Time. It's a basic introductory video that documents man's quest to understand time from many different perspectives through the ages. And we do have a new video, as you mentioned, Doug, that is going to be released late this summer. So only just a couple months away, and it's going to be quite interesting. It's going to include video footage of a time warp field generator in operation at the Anderson Institute, as well as to document specifically the activities and capacities of the research being done in other areas around the world, and much, much more as well. It's going to be quite an interesting video releasing. I could talk for 15 minutes about what's going to be included that is not available to the public today. So it's a first step, a small step, but a very important first step.
That's really great. Well, you know, it's been an absolute joy having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking your time to join us again.
Yes, Doctor, it's been great. And, you know, you're always welcome to come back when your schedule permits. You know, because our audience enjoys it when you come and chit-chat with us. So keep that in mind, and, you know, it's been a wonderful time.
Well, it's been a pleasure and a privilege, as always, Doug and Grant and everybody at Paranexus University Radio. I send all my best regards. Thanks again.
Sounds good. And if you wouldn't mind just hanging on with us just for a moment, and I would like to thank our listeners out there. We've had an enormous number of listeners for this show, an enormous amount of chat room traffic, if you will. A lot of great questions, and we really appreciate your time as well tonight. We hope that you will join us next week. We'll be Psychic Perspective with Gregory Kent. He will be having international psychic and medium Mike Brooker on, and he will be taking your calls as well, even doing some live readings. And if you haven't visited Paranexus Universe, please do so, or Paranexus.org, I should say. Please come and join us, Paranexus.org. It is an association, much like a trade association, for anomalous researchers, anybody who has an interest in understanding anomalous phenomena of all types. And we really are focused on understanding the human condition by way of anomalous phenomena, its impact on humanity. What will it mean for the human condition? So all of these things we've been talking about tonight are part and parcel to what we are interested in trying to discover you know, what makes us tick, the nature of things. So we would love to have you as a member at Paranexus.org. If you're looking for education in paranormal investigation and so forth, please visit ParanexusAcademy.org. Please also join us on Monday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern for Informal Paranormal, a little more of a laid-back show where you can call in and be a part of it. Folks, it's been a great night. And Grant, great question.
Yeah, well, it's always good to have Dr. Anderson with us. And for you folks in the chat room that hung with us tonight through our technical difficulties,
yes,
thank you so very much. We love you. And, you know, come visit us at Paranexus if you want to share data with us, or you want to discuss or show us photographs or EVPs, you know, let us know. We're always happy to take a look and help you. We're here to facilitate and do whatever we can. So thank you so very much.
Yeah, thanks again. Everybody have a great week. We hope to see you again soon, Paranexus Universe. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Night.